This recording, Arizona 2, is copyright the International Dialects of English Archive. Karma Gets a Cure is copyright Douglas N. Onaroff, Jill McCullough, and Barbara Somerville.
Well, here's a story for you. Sarah Perry was a veterinary nurse who had been working daily at an old zoo in the deserted district of the territory. So she was very happy to start a new job at a superb private practice in North Square near the Duke City Tower. That area was much nearer for her and more to her liking. Even so, on her first morning, she felt stressed. She ate a bowl of porridge, checked herself in the mirror, and washed her face in a hurry. Then she put on a plain yellow dress and a fleece jacket, picked up her kit, and headed for work. When she got there, there was a woman with a goose waiting for her. The woman gave Sarah an official letter from the vet. The letter implied that the animal could be suffering from a rare form of foot and mouth disease, which was surprising, because normally you would only expect to see it in a dog or a goat. Sarah was sentimental, so this made her feel sorry for the beautiful bird. Before long, that itchy goose began to strut around the office like a lunatic, which made an unsanitary mess. The goose's owner, Mary Harris, kept calling, "Kama, Kama," which Sarah thought was an odd name for an odd choice for a name. Kama was strong and huge, so it would take some time to force the trapper. But Sarah had a different idea. First, she tried gently stroking the goose's lower back with her palm, then singing a tune to her. Finally, she administered ether. Her efforts were not futile. And in time, the goose began to tire, so Sarah was able to hold on to Kama and give her a relaxing bath. Once Sarah had managed to bathe the goose, she wiped her off with a cloth and laid her on her right side. Then Sarah confirmed the vet's diagnosis. Almost immediately, she remembered an effective treatment that required her to measure out a lot of medicine. Sarah warned that this course of treatment might be expensive, either 5 or 6 times the cost of penicillin. I can't imagine paying so much, but Mrs. Harrison, a millionaire lawyer, thought it was a fair price for a cure. Well, let's see. I can tell you about our recent trip to San Diego. My husband and I took our two older granddaughters to San Diego to SeaWorld. And my oldest granddaughter is just crazy about anything, animal, fish, what have you. She loves it. And the younger one was in love with Ariel. So, you know, they made that connection. And I knew that they would love being in San Diego and seeing the ocean for the first time. And we went and we had a wonderful time. The four of us went over during fall break, which is a wonderful time to be in San Diego. And we like staying at Mission Bay. So we stayed at the Point. They loved the hotel, and they would get up early in the morning and go walking around it kind of sits on a little bayou, you know, and there's the water all around. And take them up to Cabrillo Point and, of course, to SeaWorld, which they just loved. And we just had a wonderful time. We love spending time with them anyway. There was a family tradition with us among a lot of Mexican families. And my mother, her daughters, there were four of us, would get together in the early part of December to make tamales. And towards the end, we would buy the mixed tamal. So it's already prepared. And she would knead it. And we would form a line. I always had that nasty job of cleaning las hojas, you know. You put them in the warm water so that they get, they're really hard, so that they're flexible. And then we would form a line, and some of us would spread the flour mixture, the corn mixture on it, and she would prepare the meat. And usually that would be like pork and beef together. And you cook it, Ilula Desmenuzas, and do the chili. She's great at making chili. It's like Italian food. The sauce has to be great with Mexican food. The chili's got to be just right. And a lot of people like it different ways, but we we only put black olives in it. And we would spread it, and then some of us would put the meat, and we'd fold them and put them together. And then we got smart after a while and would wrap them in the individual little parchment papers, because then it wouldn't make a big mess. And then we would, we would make like 20 dozens or something like that and put them in the freezer, you know, in bags. And we'd need to count them and number the bags so we would know how many we made. And then they'd be ready to go. And at Christmas time and Christmas Eve, you take them out and you cook whatever.